Welcome, everybody. And we'll start with our acknowledgement of country. The Georgetown Council acknowledges the Palawa people from the Litramarina tribe from Port Dalrymple as the traditional custodians of the land. We honour and give thanks for the caring of country, seas and skies of Kini Mata Tikinta and surrounds. We pay respect to the elders past, present and future, for they hold the memories, traditions, culture and hope of Pākehā people in Litruita. Just remind everybody that these meetings are recorded. I also just want to stress that we do not condone any additional recording, both audio or video of these sessions. So I'd want to state that clearly. Right. Let's start with item one. Apologies and leave of absence. So we do have our general manager, Shane Power, who is away this week. Rick Dunn is our acting general manager, and we also have Andrew McCarthy, who's our director of infrastructure and works. He's important because he's the director in charge with our pool and health and wellness project. But we have appropriate people who are standing in their absence. I'll start with the councillors. So, Councillor Heather Barwick, Councillor Winston Mason, Councillor Heather Ashley, Councillor Winston Archer, Councillor Tim Harris, Councillor Simone Lowe, Councillor Jason Orr, Councillor and Deputy Mayor Greg Dawson, and Councillor and Mayor Greg Keyser. From the staff side, as I mentioned, we have Rick Dunn, who's our Acting General Manager, and his normal job is the Director of Organizational Performance and Strategy. In the back, we have Cheryl Hyde, who's our Director of Corporate and Community. Is Cheryl there? I think she's just ducked out. Oops, okay. As I mentioned, our Director of Infrastructure and Development, Andrew McCarthy, is on leave, and we have our Senior Executive Assistant and Governance Officer, Louise Dickinson. And she's assisted by Kobe Roach. Kobe has got a similar title. Let's go with that. Something like that. Assistant. Welcome, Kobe. Okay. Let's move on to item two. Item two is the confirmation of our minutes. Item 2.1, the confirmation of the Ordinary Council meeting held on the 25th of February 2025. Can I call for a mover, please? Councillor Harris is our mover, seconded by Councillor Dawson. Councillor Harris.
Nothing further.
Thank you, Councillor. Councillor Dawson.
Now, I've read through the minutes and they all seem to be in accordance with what happened.
Thank you very much. Any speakers for or against or questions? Councillor? Looks like none.
Yes, thanks, Mayor.
Councillor Archer.
Although I couldn't attend the meeting last month, which, you know, short notice thing, but I apologise for that. I struggle to make heads or tails of the how the minutes are recorded, you know, up to the period of public question time, or including public question time last meeting, and it worries me a bit that the audio record doesn't seem to reflect what the written record is in the minutes, and that sort of concerns me a bit, and maybe there's something I'm missing because I wasn't here, but that's just my two bobs, so I'll hand it over.
All I'll add to that is I also had a chance to review the minutes, and there was a lot that was just simply not captured by the microphones and the equipment. A lot was off mic. So I share your view. It was not a perfect set of circumstances. All right, I think are there any more questions? Councillor Barwick?
Also, Mr. Chairman, I was not happy about the recording, even let alone what occurred that day. There's no mention in here at all, even about the police attending. Right, it has all these things, but it we're supposed to have it as close to our audio to be in our minutes, and it doesn't even record that. And there is the question of the timing of how when Councillor Archer rang me a bit because he wasn't here about the minutes. I agreed. I had a problem with it as well. I know the gallery can't even sometimes hear when they're sitting in the gallery, let alone listen to the tape when they get it at home. That's why I say to you, can you talk up? Can the councillors talk up?
I will try.
But I don't. I will not be voting for the minutes.
I will try. If I'm clearly not hitting the mark, feel free to raise a hand and I'll take that. All right, that's good to know for future reference, but I will make a real effort to project my voice. There we go. I'll do my best Darth Vader thing. All right, let's see how we go. All right, duly noted. I'll hand it back to the mover to close.
Too far away from the microphone.
That's as good as it's going to get.
It's not just you, we can't hear, so I'll
come. Yes, all the councillors, we'll ask them to... Thank you. Okay. All right, Councillor Harris, are you anything to close? All right. Thank you, Councillor Harris. We'll put that one to a vote. All those in favour, please raise your hand or say aye. We have Councillor Keyser, we have Councillor Mason, Councillor Ashley, Councillor Harris, Councillor Orr, Councillor Dawson. Against, we have Councillor Barwick. We have Councillor Archer. Abstaining. I'll record an abstain vote as a vote against. And we have Councillor Lowe. The motion is carried 6-3. That leads us to item 3, late items. There are none. Section 4, declarations of interest. So, councillors, pertaining to today's agenda before you, do you wish to declare any conflicts of interest, both real or perceived? Councillor Ashley?
Just for transparency, I'd just like to declare that as a member of the Georgetown Rotary Club, I'm not on the executive and I will not be leaving the room today when we have a vote.
Thank you very much. And similarly, I'll also declare that I'm a member of Rotary. The Act is very specific. If you have a pecuniary interest, then you can declare a conflict. In this case, I clearly do not, so I will be staying in the meeting as well. Anyone else? Good. Right. That leads us to public question time. Now, recently in this chamber, we've had quite a bit of disruption, so I want to make very, very sure that the boundaries of participation and how our public meeting time policy works are clearly understood. So firstly, every one of you should have a copy of our public question time policy on your chair. It's a precondition that you read that and you understand that conduct to attend a meeting. In short, we set aside 15 minutes, frequently we'll go more than that, for the public to ask questions. We aim to be as helpful as we possibly can, and we'll give a rigid-dig fair go at giving you a direct answer wherever we can. There are, however, sometimes circumstances where we simply may not be able to give you an on-the-spot answer, in which case we may defer and give you a response in writing between the two meetings, and that response will be published in the follow-on minutes or the next council meeting. So at least there's a record of you asking that question. In terms of behaviour, I want you all to just remember that this is a work environment. This, I have staff and I have an obligation to make sure that a safe environment is provided for everybody here. So by all means, ask a question. We'll endeavour to be on our best manners, and we'll endeavour to be as polite as we possibly can with each other for the benefit of all concerned. In terms of the conduct of a meeting, there are three key areas I'd like you to understand. The first one is, this is not a forum for protest. If you are here to protest something that you are not particularly happy with, this is not the place. However, you can make your voice heard by asking a really great question, to which we will be compelled to give you a straight answer back as best as we possibly can. Your questions are limited to 2 minutes in length. And I urge you, please, avoid a lengthy preamble. Avoid standing up here and making a number of statements that are not linked to your question. Get to your question as fast as you can. I will give you a warning when you are 30 seconds to go, 30 seconds to the end. If you do not get there, I'm going to ask you to take a seat and we'll have a second go a little bit later on. Each time you either disrupt the meeting, if you're not at the microphone asking a question, be very, very clear. This is not an opportunity for you to participate in the meeting. You're an observer. So catcalling, chatting amongst yourselves, or generally making a nuisance while you're in the gallery and disrupting the meeting, you will get a warning. Once you've had 3 warnings, I will ask you to leave the meeting. Again, this is a place of work and we are trying to get work done. If you do not want to leave, we will seek assistance in having you removed, which is most regrettable. But unfortunately, that's the best way for us to ensure that we get through the work that we need to get through. Does everybody understand where we're at? Any questions? All right, I think the boundaries have been laid. Yes?
I've just got to make a statement. I find what you've just said very, very disrespectful to myself and to the members that are here today. Because as far as I'm concerned, and what I've seen at the meetings, nobody has gone out of their way to be disrespectful to you. They've come to hear what's happening, and that's it. And for me to be put in that category, I don't like it.
Look, I appreciate your point of view. I appreciate your point of view. Again, you have our policy on your chair,
yes,
and everybody is treated equally and fairly according to that policy. It's as simple as that. Don't read too much into it. No one's been singled out. Everyone is being treated the same. All right, let us proceed. Thank you. All right, let's start with our first one. So we're first going to do questions on notice. So I'm going to acknowledge Mr. Judd. Thank you very much. Mr. Judd has submitted a number of questions, 1 through 8. He's happy for us to take those questions on notice. We will publish those in the next agenda. So thank you very much.
Excuse me, Mr. Mayor, as long as I get a written response.
You will indeed. All questions on notice will receive a written response.
And then do we have... Okay.
I'll get to Mr. Let's do these ones first. Mrs. Rainbow has submitted a question. She asks, what is the view or policy held by council on residential land that has not been developed or maintained? I'm not so sure I can give you the ideal answer to this one, but I'm going to have a shot.
Can I
have
my...
Please come forward, Mrs. Rainbow.
This is spoken from a person who's lived next to this land for 43 years mm-hmm. and have been to this council numerous times over those 43 years, and there's been action before. The land was sold in 2018 and I think maybe since then. At present, it's got blackberries over 1.5 metres high. I'm grateful for my neighbour who mows the verge. And the edge because of black snakes and tiger snakes coming off that land.
Yikes.
But at present, I'm sure you're not, but it's over my neck.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Thank you. I'll try my best to give you an answer here. So if it's private land, then basically we defer to the private land owner to maintain that land. We do periodically at the beginning of the season issue fire abatement notices. The fire abatement notices typically go out around December-ish. I think sometimes we send them on bulk preemptively. Occasionally I get people who complain because they feel victimized because we sort of mail everybody who has a vacant block of land. It's probably fair feedback. The person has a period of time to respond. I think it is 6 weeks. I think it's four weeks. Okay, 4 weeks to respond to that abatement notice. And by responding, they either mow their block, clear their vegetation accordingly. If they do not do that during that 1 month period, then we will typically organize a independent contractor to mow/the land, and then we will add that service cost to their rates charge in the next cycle. That's kind of the best I can do, Mrs. Rainbow. Is that sort of helpful?
Well, sir, I've been there for 12 months and it's not going to cut.
If you could get the details to our team, and we will add it to our list of properties that need to be monitored for abatement notices, we'd be happy to do that. All right, so let's do that one. All right, then I have another one. So Mrs. Wooten, do you want to come to the microphone? Just say your name and address, please, for the record.
Lorraine Wooten, Lowhead. And I'd just like to say there's something wrong with this speaker because we're getting a reverberation. It's not the same as it usually is. It's worse than what it usually is.
We'll have to have a look. Is it because we turned the volume? Yeah. It's a side effect of turning the volume up.
Sort of an echo in everything.
Yeah. I'll try.
My question's on the Aquatic Centre community information sessions.
Yep.
When I first looked at the advertisement intending to book for the community information sessions to be held on the Wednesday, the 19th of March, it was only a few days after it was posted. I think it was about the 8th of March. I found all four sessions were full, so I couldn't book anything. However, about a week later, I looked at it again and found two sessions had vacancies, so I booked for the rather inconvenient for me 6 p.m. slot. There were only five other people at that session, and I wonder how many others were put off attending from their first look at the site. So my question one is, how many people in total attended the series of meetings held on the 2 days last week?
All right, let me first try to answer that one. So, as always, Mrs. Wooten, thank you for your question. So I'm going to comment on the circumstances that led to those sessions being booked. So when we set up the meetings, we did not anticipate individuals booking every seat in the session. So as in, one person would make a booking for all 10 seats. So we didn't quite anticipate that. So we then had to go through a process of contacting the people who had made 10 bookings for one session and saying, look, bookings are limited to you and one other. And then those seats were then made available. And as for the actual attendance, I think the first day was pretty much full. The second day was a bit of a mixed bag.
I was on the first day, and there was only six at the session that I went to.
There were instances where people registered but did not turn up.
But I'm confident that the first day it was fully booked. But the second day, I just can't comment. I just haven't had any feedback, so...
So how many in total did attend?
We'll have to give you that on notice. Is that?
You don't know.
No, I don't. I really don't know. But I think there were five sessions the first day.
I mean, the exact number in round terms, 50 to 60, but the exact number we'll come back to you on. Yeah, take that on notice.
No, thank you. And what was the total cost of running those meetings?
Through the chair to the general manager, they were expensive because we did fly down our two main advisors from the mainland to participate in those meetings, so the cost was not trivial. I will let you know that. We'll take that on notice as well.
Okay. And you might as well have my third question now. Wouldn't it have been more cost-effective to have had one or possibly two meetings, a day and night session, where a greater number of people could have attended and heard what others had to say and saved those presenters having to repeat everything so many times?
Our
or was
advice,
it just to divide and conquer?
No, not at all. It's a question of making sure that there is effective communication both to and from. And so you have this inverse relationship. As your numbers go up, I've seen this on our community roadshows. The more you have the higher the attendance at an individual roadshow, the more it tends to be a one-way exchange, the community pretty much just telling you whatever they want to tell you, versus you having an opportunity to respectfully and thoughtfully respond and provide them with the best information you can. It's an inverse relationship. We take advice from some of the experts which we recruit for these sorts of projects, and that was their advice. And it worked overall very well. I've had a good number of people contact me from those sessions thanking me for the quality of the dialogue. Some people, I think, didn't choose to take away much. Others got a tremendous amount. It's pretty much hard.
I just find it beneficial if you've got a larger number, everyone hears what everyone else has to say, and that spreads it around. Thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Wooten. All right, Mr. Nielsen. And Mr. Nielsen, I'm going to time you, so you've got lengthy questions here.
Time at home, and my wife's running 3/4 minutes. Then
I am going to be rooting for you. State your name and address, please.
Graham Nielsen, 51 Tamer Avenue. Question one.
Go for it.
Mayor, the community in the main, I believe, wants this magnificent new aquatic centre, but it does not have to be at the expense of the much loved and utilised 25 metre outdoor pool. I ask this question assuming that council administration entered into negotiations or arrangements with architects and construction companies before elected members voted to decommission and demolish the entire swimming centre. We state categorically that it is our belief that only elected members, as trustees of all assets owned by a community of ratepayers, have the authority, unless delegated to management, to buy, sell, build or dispose of assets owned by ratepayers of a community. We, that is Fiona Hills, Lorraine Wooten and I, will gladly withdraw our appeal if Council decides to modify its planned footprint of the new centre and keep the 25-metre pool. We will be asking the Tribunal to order that this matter returns to Council as some aspect of the proposal are prohibited in a open space zone. I ask, when did elected members as the community trustees of all that we, the ratepayers, own, debate and pass a motion to make the momentous decision to authorise management to initiate and proceed with plans and processes that will lead to the decommissioning and destroying of all of the swimming centre, including the 25-metre pool?
You're right. Well done. And as it turns out, you're 15 seconds spare. So well done. So, Mr. Nielsen, as you have so rightly indicated, you are part of a planning appeal, and basically matters concerning the development application appeal have now been lodged, which means that we can now no longer publicly discuss that matter. It is now a subject to a TASCAT hearing, and we will not take any questions on that specifically.
Is there a person here that would take my question and ask it who is not in the appeal? Yes. That's how ridiculous it is, man.
Now, Mr. Nielsen.
There's somebody who would ask on my...
Yes, so Mr. Nielsen, I'm giving you your first warning for disrupting the meeting. And I will... I may foreshadow and save your time. It's not in any way bound to who asks the question. It is this. It does not matter. It's the content. Any questions pertaining to that appeal, we cannot answer. So you can ask. You absolutely can, but not specifically about the planning.
I wasn't asking about the planning, sir.
Again, Mr. Nielsen, let's try to keep this pretty clear. Ask your questions. I really would like to see this through without event.
I'll ask my second question if it is all right with you, sir.
I am extending that invitation. Off you go.
Mayor, on the 6th of March, you made some claims and gave information on Tamer FM radio following the February Council meeting, which I considered required a response. The station has granted me a right of reply and they have offered to record an interview with me next week. In your report, you quoted over $3 million to keep the outdoor pool functional and referenced the deed which covers the federal government's $15 million contribution to the new aquatic centre. Can you please provide me with a copy of the deed this week and the evidence on which you relied to quote the costs of keeping the 25-metre pool operational?
So that's your question? At this stage, I'm advised that we can't do that because it is a deed between the federal government and the Georgetown Council. Let me look into it, Mr. Nielsen. I'd actually like to give you that. I'll take it on notice. How about that?
I'm hard of hearing. Are you saying you can't give me the deed?
I'm saying that that's the preliminary advice, initial information I've received. We will take it on notice. I just want to make sure that we aren't upsetting our sponsors. The deed is normally specific. It's typical.
Well, why did you quote it on Tamer FM?
I'm quite capable of making a generalised assertion about a deed.
No, you're talking specific.
You're talking about the specific written document. It's quite different.
You mentioned the deed and made specific commentary about it and how it would affect the project.
There's no problem with that.
Right, well, you've got no problem getting the deed, or do we go to the government and get it?
We'll respond to you in writing. Thank you. We'll take it on notice.
Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Nielsen. We did well today. Thank you. Any other questions from the gallery today?
Yep.
Mrs. Hills, welcome back. State your name and address for the record, please.
I don't actually need to state my address. It says in your policy. I just have to state my name.
Have we started public question time? We have started public question time.
We were in public question time.
Ah, yes, we're now in public question time, section 5.3. Thank you very much, Mr. Dawson. Thank you. 1:32 commenced. All right, Mrs. Hills.
Okay, Fiona Hills, Georgetown. I want to ask a question through the chair to Councillor Mason.
You may not.
Why?
You may not. You can only address the chair.
Are you serious?
Yes, you can only address the chair.
Point of order, Mayor. I believe you are correct that the question has to be addressed to yourself, but you can delegate answering that question to whoever you decide to delegate that answer to, whether it be the general manager, other staff or councillors.
Thank you, councillor. I choose not to, so I'll ask you to redress your question to me.
You choose not to?
Yes, as is the proclivity of the chair. So I'm saying you have to ask your question to me.
Okay, well, I know that Councillor Mason attended the community consultation meetings last week, and I would like to hear his feedback in the terms of the majority of the matters raised.
I will defer, Mr. Councillor Mason. Are you happy to answer that question?
Yes, more than happy.
Please, take it away.
What in particular?
Oh, just what the majority of the questions raised were, what people wanted to hear. What were the questions that were being asked?
The question about keeping the pool was relevant, but it wasn't the main concern of the people present. I picked up from their main concern was we never had a management plan or an operational plan for when the pool was actually finished. What people, I think, misunderstood was the warm water pool, or we'll call it the therapy pool. They seemed to think that was a waste of time because we already had a swimming pool at the high school. Now, we talk about two different things when you talk about that. The therapy pool is 10 metres by 16.5 metres. That's the same size as the Launceston warm water pool, who cater for 100,000 people. Ours will cater for 7,000 plus. The size of the pool, some people, and I referred people to go to Oatlands and have a look at their pool. Two people have come back to me and said, well, if that's what we're getting, we're more than happy with that.
Do you know how many the population of Oaklands is, though?
I can't tell you.
7,000.
7,000, correct.
There might only be 1,000 people live in Oaklands, but it's the catchment area that they cater for.
It's very similar to our municipal size. I've had detailed discussions with the mayor and the general manager of the Southern Midlands, and by their words, not mine, the swimming pool is working exactly as they had intended. They have no desire to change it. It has a success in their eyes.
Another area that of great concern was the opportunity for parents and grandparents to spend time in the pool with their young ones. But in some way, that can happen in the large pool, the 25 metre pool, because one lane is 1 metre deep. So that's the lane
for your toddlers.
Learn to swim. It's also for mums and bubs. They can also spend, mums and bubs can spend time in the warm water pool or the therapy pool.
The carnivals? Did anyone talk about carnivals?
Carnivals, everyone talked about carnivals, but when you talk about carnivals, we can't build a facility to facilitate one day event a year.
Okay, pretty sure there's more than one day of event.
No,
anyway.
Hang on. More than one day event. We have Lilydale, Exeter, Beaksfield.
St Pat's.
Come to our school. Come to our pool. When they're closer to the launch system than us, why do they come to our pool?
We should be happy they're coming here to spend their money.
Nah. They get the reason they come.
But in total, 11 group bookings in a year. So just think about that. So 11 group bookings.
Is that, 11 days it's used? Or just the bookings?
It's 11 days that you have swim carnivals in a year, Fiona.
Now, Lilydale, for instance, are part of the Launceston City Council. Why would they want to come to Georgetown?
Shouldn't we want people to come to the town?
Yeah.
Okay. Hang on. So just remember, we're straying from our...
Yeah, okay, that's fine. So anyway, I'll move on to my next question.
Okay, but let me just be specific here. Try to address the questions to me and try not to debate with me. Ask a question by all means.
The problem is that you don't answer the question.
I do, and be careful. We're trying to do this nicely. Come on, Fiona, ask a question. Let's go for it.
Okay, after last week's community consultation meetings, what is the initial consensus by council of the community support in the health and wellbeing centre and retaining the outdoor pool?
Well, look, we have to wait for feedback from...
Did you go to any of the meetings?
No, I specifically chose not to because didn't want to bias. But some of the other councillors did, and a lot of the staff were there. They collated feedback. Mm. I can only say that anecdotally, it would appear that overwhelmingly there is support for the plan.
So you should have just listened to my petition and had a community meeting, and you would have found out what the community wanted.
No, again, from the...
What actually is happening with my petition,
Fiona,
anyway?
Fiona, please, come on. You can see that you're going to, this is going to end badly. Let me answer the questions. Be polite. All right, so the overwhelming feedback that I have received, it's anecdotal. I haven't received any collated, report from a council officer who's attended. This is anecdotal based on what's been told to me. Overwhelmingly, I'm here that people are pretty happy with the plan. Overwhelmingly. They like what's going on. That's what I'm hearing. What I'm hearing is that a lot of people who went to those sessions had genuine questions and they got answers. And from based on that, they
said it
was pretty good.
Not what I heard.
I'm only telling you what I've heard. I'm also being told that those who are very passionately invested in keeping the outdoor pool hear you, love the passion, all good. When it is what it is. What I'm hearing is that a lot of those people, they came with opinions and they left with the same opinions.
Bullshit.
Okay, so that's now your first, second and third warning. I've given you every opportunity, Fiona. This is a professional environment. It's a professional environment. You just simply can't do that. So check your manners. One more outburst from you, I'll have you removed from the meeting. I guess totally unacceptable. Right. Please, Mrs. Rainbow.
Fiona, in support of you, I stood in this meeting in March of 2019 to question you about the behavioural manager who came up and swore an F word in my face in an intimidating manner. And on the day, you said his behaviour
was up to you when I asked, was this acceptable behaviour? I never got an apology until I brought the matter up 12 months later. I'm so saddened to come today to see that you represent a breed of men who use their position to intimidate.
Do you have a question, Mrs. Rambo?
Yes.
Do you have a question?
When are you going to adopt the rules that are laid down in the government for the protection and the treatment of women? Thank you.
Again, difficult one to answer. I think that we pretty much sort of follow every piece of government legislation that there is, and certainly cover all of the guidelines laid down by the state government, and that includes codes of conduct and behavioural conduct. So my impression would be that we're pretty much already there. Thank you for your question, Mrs. Rainbow. Does anybody else have a question? Yes, please. I'm going to limit you to two at a time, but I may invite you to come back. We'll do two, see if there's anybody else, and I'll invite you back. All right. Name, please, and address.
Chelsea Crawford Coates. I live up near the Water Tower.
Thank you.
Not giving my actual address.
Good enough.
You just said that you are heard by the government rules, but you let the GM back after his public disturbance. Surely that wouldn't be allowed in another government area.
And so that is a highly personal question. Circumstances, it's private, it's personal. The circumstances I simply cannot comment on for the protection of all sides, so I'm not going to accept your question.
Okay. I have... No, Mr. Nelson's, I think it was. I asked, when did elected members as the community trustee of all that we, the ratepayers, own debate and pass a motion to make the monumentous decision to authorise management to utilise, not to initiate and proceed with plans and processes that would lead to the Demon Commission and destroying of all the swimming centre, including the 25-metre pool?
Again, as I said, I'll take that on notice. As you know, there is a planning appeal underway. I have limited scope to answer questions like that.
Okay. I hadn't done this question before. I didn't know anything.
So that's fine. I appreciate that.
My other issue is with the footpaths.
Yes.
I have done a lot of snaps and solves. I have spoke to members in the council, and apparently we don't have enough funding. When will we get the funding for this? I push my pram with my daughter in it every day. I tip her out of it at some point on a large stretch of our footpath, and they're saying we don't have funding.
That is correct. So thank you very much for your question. So we have an extensive network of footpaths, some new, some very dated. In our operational budget every year, we have a set nominated value that we put towards maintenance and the upgrading of those footpaths. Some years that money is used entirely for regrinding and levelling where there are tree roots have moved the relative slabs. Other years we may dig up sections and we may replace them. To a large extent, we look to outside assistance and funding to the maintenance and expansion of those footpaths. So recently, the federal member for Bass, Bridget Archer, in an election commitment, she made a commitment, I think, for $600,000. I think it was $600,000 for the Strand. Anyway, I forget. But basically, in North Tamar Avenue, the Strand, and what is the other one? Little Street. Those three will now, assuming it's matched or that the Liberal Party wins the election, those three would get footpaths through that funding. Otherwise, we typically have enough money, I think it is, and again, just be careful, I'm going back a little bit to remember here, but I think it's about 150 metres a year we have budget to lay. And that exhausts our budget. So things are very, very tight. That's the extent of our finances.
The footpath over Pikeway Bay, though, that will only get done if she's re-elected, isn't it?
That is correct. But not only that, it'll only be done if the opposition wins the government.
But why should that be? Why can't we just do it now? Like they've leaked their...
We don't have the money. We don't have the money.
But otherwise, you can do it over the new development, over in Friend Street.
A lot of the time, the developer, we set circumstances where they have to install the infrastructure, crossovers, pavement, footpaths, as part of their development application. So it's funded privately by the developer.
So you, like, housing has like funded that? Because that's their land?
That is correct.
Okay. So if, with the footpaths that are really bad, that I pushed my daughter out of her pram in...
Yep.
They're not going to get fixed without the funding that we have.
Well, let me answer this in a little bit of a roundabout way. So firstly, thank you so much for letting us know. Where you find these things, often we are reliant on people like you to actually tell us. So that's great. The snap and send, it would be better if you just submit.
I've submitted it.
Then what happens is we basically collate all of those citizen feedback requests and we put it into our public works schedule. If we have the money, we do it sometimes straight away. Otherwise, we literally have to wait for it to come up in terms of our budget.
So I submitted that photo well over a year ago. My daughter's now 14 months and it is not fixed. I took photos of it today that I would happily email. And I would like a councillor or you to go and have a look at the footpath because it is a liability waiting to happen.
I'm going to ask you, please, and again, just be careful from the gallery. Don't disrupt the meeting, okay? One at a time. So please, I'm asking you really nicely, you would help us go onto our website, fill in a customer service request, or go to the front desk. We did have a hiccup that happened. We're in the process of changing our entire software that runs the entire council. It's a 3-year project. We're 2/3 of the way through. We did have a period where we lost a number of requests. Let's play it safe. If you would resubmit that, we will have a look at it very quickly. Typically, you get a 1 or 2 week turnaround, an initial assessment. So if you do, that would be very, very helpful.
I have resubmitted it today.
Thank you very much.
I would say the person that rang me last year will have another call at me for me because he rang me saying there's no funding.
Yes. So you did get feedback. Sorry, I didn't.
Yeah, I got feedback from him.
Okay.
And there's no funding to fix that.
Well, we're just about to roll over to our next financial year, which means that we get a new budget, a new pot of money, if you would like. And we can then reassess and reprioritize all the service requests that come in. The most important part is it needs to be in that queue. So if we double check that, there's a good chance we might get to it. But again, like everything, we reprioritize. And so it's just not something that we can guarantee, but we definitely make our best effort.
Okay.
Thank you for your questions. I'll ask anybody else. Mrs. Rambo had a few different goes. Welcome.
Thank you. Lindsay Brown, 4 Adelaide Street.
Did you say your name is it Lindsay?
Lindsay Brown, 4 Adelaide Street.
Thank you. Welcome.
Getting back to the old pool.
Yep.
The sanitary in one of the documents is considerable leakage. What's class as considerable leakage?
Oh, I don't think that we've actually published the engineering report on that. But what I can do is I will relate a discussion I had with the gentleman, Ian Ware, who looks after that pool. So, again, one meeting, everybody. Chelsea, Mrs. Rambo, if I can ask you to please just keep it down. Thank you. And we're running close to the end of question time. This is Ian's words, not mine, and myself and Councillor Orr, we recently did an underwater inspection of the pool, the ceiling joints and the grouting and all the rest. So the pool does leak considerably. I can tell you adequate, but let me try to give you a quantum so you understand. So there's a clay base underneath the pool. All right, so when you first fill it up, in the first 24 hours, a third of the volume of the pool just leaks straight out the bottom. In the first 24 hours, a third of the pool just leaks straight out of the bottom. Over time, what we suspect happens is that the clay underneath the pool hydrates, and it then sort of it plugs the leaks, and then the leaking slows down. We recently had Taz Water, who had to fix again, I've got to be very careful. I'm not an expert in this area, but I'm told they had to fix a line that traversed underneath the pool. And the feedback from them was when they cut the trench, there was a presence of a significant volume of water. We fill in, we add water to the pool constantly.
So when you say add water to the pool, at what rate?
That I can't answer. The only part I can repeat with accuracy is the claim that we lose about a third of it in the first day. The rest I don't know.
So that adds to extra costs.
Well, that's part of it.
Re-adding your water.
That is certainly part of it. But again, you know, the key thing to remember is you have a pool that was designed for a lifespan of 50 years. So when the original members of this community, and a lot of them did this on their weekends with their own equipment and not necessarily, you know, civil engineers or experts, good people of this community got together, they decided to build a pool. Again, one meeting, just be careful, second warning. When they did it to the best of their ability. The design lifespan was intended to be 50 years. The pool is now 40 years old. So the feedback we have is that the cost of bringing that pool up to today's standard and extending its life for another 5 or 10 years is almost equivalent to the cost of building a new pool. And so the return on the investment for the community in doing that is negligible.
From what I understand, from what you said previously, I understand that pool's
going to go... One meeting, everybody, please. One meeting.
That pool's going to go...
This is Rainbow first warning. Sorry.
So what I understand is what you said previously, that pool's going to go regardless. When you build the new complex.
Yes, the pool is going to... The existing outdoor pool is going to be demolished. The plan is to build the undercover facility... And then stage 2 and 3, an outdoor kids' water play area and an external pool. But be very clear, the outdoor kiddies area and an external pool is unfunded. We have to have success with the state or the federal government or private, you know, operators maybe in Bell Bay to provide us the funding to do that. At this stage... If we had to do it and raise funds through rates, I think we'd have a very unhappy community if I started to fund that through rates.
With an indoor pool, I mean, Georgetown's got a lot of asthmatics.
Yes.
So how's that going to react with the chlorine and the acids that are going in the pool with those asthmatics, if they use a pool for swimming?
I'm not an expert. I'm really not an expert. But all I can say is we undertook recently, myself and a group of councillors, we undertook a tour under the auspices of one of the consultants we used to 5 different recently constructed facilities in Victoria. And these are the equivalents of what we're building, a blended... health and wellness centre, health facilities as well as aquatic facilities. And I can say unequivocally that at no stage was that raised as an issue. The filtration, the air conditioning appeared, again, to the layman's eyes to be very effective.
Yep.
I can't give you a better answer. I'm sorry. It's the best of my ability.
No worries. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your questions. I'm going to take one more question. Yes. Thank you.
Marilyn Butler.
Thank you, Marilyn, and welcome.
Georgetown. I'm probably one of the oldest people here, right? I've lived in Georgetown 75 years, okay? And I've hardly been to a council meeting. You don't have to answer me. I'm sorry. This is just a statement. You can talk. I don't hear... None of you were allowed to talk. And as far as you smiling at me, Councillor, or what, not funny. At the last meeting, Mrs. Wooden was standing up here, putting everything she had in her heart on the line for when she was on the first pool. And you sat there and laughed. And I watched you and I thought, you will be the first vote out of my list.
Marilyn,
okay?
Be careful, please. Don't make it personal.
No, I haven't finished. I saw, when the first meeting I did come, I saw a young woman come up here and speak about the pool and for her daughter and everything and be reduced to tears. That's not funny.
Yeah.
So it seems as if, and I don't know, I haven't spoken to her about it, but she's gone home and she's thought, you won't do that again. So she's toughened up. And she was pulled back down again by you in public. So the next time she stood up here, she lost it. That was easy enough to do.
This is Lauren.
So you called the police.
Yep.
And as far as Graham Nelson's concerned too, that was Fiona before, but Graham, he done all his homework. He's not silly. And you can't, you must have known he would come and ask questions.
Absolutely.
Don't say you don't know.
No, absolutely.
You know what Graham's like.
Graham and I've known each other for many years.
And you can't answer his question. No, he doesn't rant. He speaks up, which is more than what a lot of others do, and with your microphones. How many times have we got to say speak up? How many times have I got to sit in the front row and I've got hearing aids?
Okay. Can I
answer? It's just, I just feel ashamed of the council.
So Marilyn, can you may I answer?
You nod.
You have to ask the question.
I say there was no question.
But I'm going to, can I answer? Because there was a question in there. Can I answer? If you don't mind, please.
Okay.
Just indulge me.
Okay.
Marilyn, I have a great deal of respect for you. We've come to know each other through various Rotary events and a common circle of friends. I have a lot of time for you.
Yes.
And I understand that this looks like a very confronting process.
Yeah.
One of the greatest frustrations that we have in local government is that we are hamstrung by a set of operating rules and a set of standards that we simply must abide to. It's not through choice. It is simply the rules that we must abide by.
Yeah.
So I understand that you see that it's all me. I'm the only appointed spokesman
Such
for council.
Such bad manners.
No, well, that's a... That's a question of perspective. I'm the appointed spokesman of the council. So you're right, I'm the only one who answers questions. That is the way that it is. I may occasionally choose to direct a question to another councillor. These are the rules. That's the way that it is. Again, we have very clear, I make tremendous effort to try to help everybody to understand those rules when they come in. Everyone has a set of the policy on their chair so they understand it. And I try to shepherd members of the community through these forums as best I can so that we can get to the questions and provide the answers that are good for our council. I'm trying. It just sometimes doesn't go well.
I can see that, but... And at my age, I sit here and I see a woman getting broken by the man in front. I'm sorry.
I don't accept it.
I've seen...
I really don't accept it.
Heather nodding her head. Now, Heather, I am sorry I've not had over the years a lot of time for a lot of what you do. But in the last...
Please take a seat, Marilyn. I think you're done. Take a seat. There's no question in there. Thank you. Please take a seat.
No, I said there was no question.
There is no question. Take a seat. Again, you're out of order. You're out of order. Again, I have to behave by a set of policies. That is our meeting procedure. You cannot interrupt the meeting. If you've got a question, I welcome you to come and answer. I welcome you. I will give it a red hot go to give you the best answer I can. Chelsea, I'm going to take the final question from Chelsea.
Most people don't know that there was an ACDC report done a few years ago that was around mental health, drugs, housing, and all the other things in there. What are you going to do to fix that, in our town?
It's a very, very good question. Thank you very much. It's really hard. You know, a lot of time people characterise local government as roads, rates, and rubbish. And to a certain extent, that really is still the core remit of what local government does. over time you see local governments step into the void to try to fill these things as best as they possibly can. But you need to acknowledge that we are absolutely under-equipped for that. We don't have the operating expenses or the expertise in many, many areas. What we do try to do is we do try to foster partnerships with the best available agencies, whether they're not-for-profit independents or whether they're government agencies, to try to assist us. So we've tried various different things. We've worked with, is it Lauriston House? Is that the right one?
Laurel House,
thank you. And various other agencies, the Royal Flying Doctor Service, we are very active with a lot of the in-feed services into Neighbourhood House. We try the best we can. But in many, many ways, the answer is simply that we defer to the experts who hold that responsibility. We will capture the information and then we will defer it onto somebody who has the operating budget, the expertise and the capacity. So we certainly are trying. We do the best within our means and our capability. But just understand, it's very, very limited. There's 50 people roughly in the whole of the Georgetown Council organization, 50 people. And that includes everything from the people who empty the bins, repair the roads, man the front counter, you name it. It's a very tight, small little organization with a small operating budget.
Why couldn't you put Blythe or something to ask for more organisations to come down here to support us?
We do even better. We actually invite them in and we speak to them face to face.
But there's barely been anyone for us that suffer from mental health, especially the people that have suffered through suicide and people that have died through suicide.
Oh, look, it's an insidious and terrible problem. We are definitely not the best people to deal with that. But we do things like we sometimes do. We fund the mental first aid courses for our community, our volunteer organizations, so that they're aware and they have the skills to handle those sorts of situations at a very superficial level. But that's literally the limit and extent of our capacity.
But why can't you go and ask people to come down here? Like,
we do.
But who? Like, my family was someone that has suffered from a suicide in our family, and there was barely any support down here for us.
Look, I can't talk about the individual circumstances, but we constantly have meetings with organisations that come through, you know, whether it's,
There's just no support for us.
Or, you know, whoever. We constantly have meetings. We advocate for our community. These things come up. If you go to the people at Vincent de Paul's, they will tell you the same thing. They're also incredibly resource constrained. The problem is simply bigger than the budget's allowed. Now, that's not to say that we're beaten and defeated. It's just that we have a certain capacity that we can execute on. That's the best I can give you. I'm sorry.
So
we're open to feedback. Well, you've got great ideas of what we're not doing.
I'm saying that we don't have enough services. We need more services.
I agree.
Can't you do something to get us more services here? It's just going to be more people dying because of our mental health.
All the time we ask, but we just don't have the capacity to do it.
What do you mean you don't have the capacity? Like, you don't have the funding or you don't have...
We advocate. That's the role of council. We advocate. So, for example, when I have the Minister of Health or I have the state government or federal ministers here, we have detailed discussions on this. But again, that does not allow us to put feet on the ground to do the work.
So you're going to lose more people?
You need budget.
Basically.
Budget. Budget and money. That's the key blocker. We do not have budget and money to do this, address it. We need more budget. That's the number one thing.
But aren't you the person that has to get us the budget?
Okay, I think we've had enough. Okay. All right, that's the end of question time. We do need to get up.
Clarify your question, your answer.
Mr. Nielsen, we are out of time. We simply have to conclude the meeting.
Very quick, please.
Okay, I'll give you one bit of latitude. Go for it.
Thank you.
Be sure I'm going to give you one question, and then we're calling an end to question time.
I want clarification. You gave technical details in responding to Mr. Brown read the seepage from the pool.
Yes.
And I'm quite shocked about that. Can you please tell us if that detailed engineering Is it in the report that we have in black?
Graham.
And when is it in that report, the details you gave?
Graham.
Yes or no?
The same answer I gave you previously. There is an appeal underway. I cannot answer. As I mentioned clearly in my response, I'm relating a discussion, a conversation I had with Mr. Ian Ware. He's not a technical specialist. These are the rough parameters of an informal discussion. That's all I can say. He's not a technical expert. I don't have a technical document. We refer to the engineer's advice.
Right. I take it
Thank
from
you,
that.
Mr.
That it's in the, when will you be releasing the unredacted report?
We will not be releasing the unredacted report, Mr. Nielsen, because the authors have specifically prohibited us from doing so. However, we are going to release a report from the same author for public consumption, which we've now asked them to compile.
Did you leave that unredacted report on my doorstep last week?
No, Mr. Nielsen, I have no idea what
you're talking
about.
Do you know who did?
No, Mr. Nielsen, I have no idea what you're talking
about. Have you any objection if I release
Thank you, Mr.
Do you have any objection if I release the report?
Through the chair to the general manager.
I just told you.
One meeting, everyone.
Mr. Nielsen, you made the request, the right to information request. That process is still active. It's subject to you asking for a review, and we're currently assessing that at the moment. How you come to find a report is a matter for you. But we will go through the right to information process as it's required under the Act. And I really don't have any further to say because we have an active right to information request that is still ongoing.
It's prescribed.
Acting General Manager, do you have any objections to me releasing a document that was left at my house?
We'll take that on notice. We'll take that on notice. We need to get counsel, get advice on that. We'll take it on notice. Thank you, Mr. Nielsen.
I've got to make up my own mind.
Mr. Nielsen, no, we'll take that on notice. All right, everybody, thank you very much for your attendance. That is the end of question time. You're welcome to stay if you want to witness the excitement of a normal council meeting. We'll try to thrill and interest you as best we can. But for those of you who would like to leave, that's the end of question time. All right. Okay. That takes us to item six is the Acting General Manager's Declaration. Thank you, Rick. We note your declaration for the record. Item seven is as a planning authority. So I always read this little preamble so everybody understands what a local government planning authority is and what we can and cannot do because, again, surprise, surprise, it's rather prescriptive. So firstly, councils are a planning authority. One meeting, please. If I can ask everybody in the gallery to please just keep it down, that would be great.
Point of order, mate.
Point of order. Point of order to everybody. There is too much noise. All right. Everybody? Good. Thank you. Please just keep it down. Councils are a planning authority. Each council acts as a planning authority for their municipality. In this role, councillors consider development applications and make administrative decisions that are based on the council's planning scheme. While councillors are obliged to consider the community's views, this does not mean they can vote in favour of those views while fulfilling the role of a planning authority. Councillors, again, guys. All right, everybody. So there's a blanket statement to the gallery. Yeah, please keep it down. Okay. Councillors must make planning decisions based on whether a planning application is consistent with the local planning scheme, even if members of the community object to their planning proposal. And we are joined today by Alex Bowles and by Justin Simons, our two chief planners, to discuss item 7.1. This is DA 2024/26 for 32-42 Macquarie Street, 7 Bathurst Street, Charles Robbins Place, and the adjoining road reserves. This is for a mixed-use development. With some excitement that we receive a development application of such magnitude that will have such a profound impact on the character of our CBD. The report
is truly extensive and comprehensive. The planner has answered a raft of different questions, representations, both technically and in areas with some good humour, I may add. On page 51, item 16 is the recommendation. And the recommendation is that the application for use and development, mixed-use development, visitor accommodation, service apartments, cafe and bar, residential, multiple dwellings, there are 13 of those, and general retail and hire, commercial shops, demolition and redevelopment at 32 to 42 Macquarie Street, 7 Bathurst Street, Charles Rollins Place, and adjoining road reserves be approved, subject to the following conditions. There are a number of different conditions in this application that read from the top of page 51 all the way through to the bottom, or to through the middle of page 56. I want to thank both of you gentlemen for the work that you put through in processing this application, and I will call respectfully for a mover and a seconder for this motion.
So
Councillor Harris is our mover, seconded by Councillor Lowe. Councillor Harris.
Can you say something?
I'm sorry, it's kind of the limitation of the audio. I'll try
better?
My best.
Can you hear me now?
We'll try. Okay.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman, we've got a big box here and it's not even connected. And it's
yeah,
a speaker to work it, with these speakers.
It gives feedback.
It and it's not working.
It gives feedback. And so it makes it worse, not better. And again, during a meeting is usually not the best time to try to fix your technical problems. We'll try to do a better job for next meeting. Again, we are limited. All right, Councillor Harris, take it away.
You sure?
Yes, I am.
Okay, that's good. To say that this development will be fairly exciting for most of the town, if not all, is probably an understatement, and I think it will be a very good asset to our town and our region going forward.
Thank you, Councillor Harris. Councillor Lowe, a seconder.
Thank you. Yes, so as it's a discretionary application, it does address all the criteria in the as a performance criteria, which is what we are here today to do. It's whilst a lot of community really do want to see the development of the space, it will cause a little bit of angst in community because of the size and the current shops and all the other things that we've sort of learned about from community. But as the role of the planning authority, we do have a job to assess the application as it is presented to us. Obviously, we're here to try and understand the concerns of community, and there were some things raised around the privacy of some of the residents, and I just think that that needed to be given some extra consideration. And what I've learnt is that whilst there is residential buildings in the general business zone, if they sit within the 50 metres, then the privacy concerns do have some validity, but because they sit, I think it was 65 metres out of the general business zone, that you can't decline an application based on the privacy that might be, I'm not sure if jeopardised is the word I'm looking for, but I just wanted to share that there are some concerns that communities raised, and that within the planning application process we can't take those into account. So, thank you.
Thank you, Councillor. With that, I'll open it to speakers for or against and questions. Councillor Mason.
Thank you, Matt. I'll support the motion for the same reason as previous two speakers. And if you'd like to look at page 98 and 99, you'll see some drawings of what's proposed. And really, for that to be built in Georgetown, it's nearly unbelievable to me. That's something you'd see in George Street in Sydney or in Melbourne somewhere. What it also does, we're getting rid of the old chicken feed building, which has been a bit of a hassle for the last 20-odd years. Bit of an eyesore. It doesn't look too bad just now, but it's been an eyesore in the past. And to replace that with what we've got here, it's a plus for Georgetown.
Thank you, Councillor Mason. Anyone else? Councillor Archer.
Just a question at this stage, probably a couple. In regards to page 52 and under number one, under the endorsed plans, the ECTM Consulting Operational Waste Management Plan, is that that's for construction, I'd imagine. Would that be correct on page 52 of our agenda?
You found it, guys?
Yep.
All right, through the chair to Justin Simons, our chief planner.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. No, in this instance, it is a operational waste management plan for when the development takes up. So our initial concern with this proposal was it would generate significant volumes of waste beyond the capacity of our public waste management system to deal with. So the information was requested of them how they are going to manage their waste removal from that site, and they've put forward a management plan to do so.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I think it's probably appropriate that it, and I'm not too sure if it's been adequately addressed, but asbestos on site and the management of that during demolition and construction of the new establishment. What has that been adequately addressed, or is that more appropriate during building?
Through the chair.
So generally it is more appropriately dealt with through the WorkSafe Act. We have put a provision in the recommendations that they provide a environmental management plan during a construction environmental management plan during construction, and we've specifically highlighted that that plan is to detail how they will manage asbestos. However, it is up to WorkSafe to manage that, so it's not within our expertise to provide them any guidance on how they do that, but we have required them to make sure that they spell out how they're going to do it and make sure that they're aware of the WorkSafe regulations and abiding by those regulations. So we've put a condition on there for the construction environmental management plan and also a note that relates to their obligations under the WorkSafe Act.
All right, and probably expect my final one, which you'll probably confirm will come under building, I suspect, but that products used in the construction be that meet the Australian standards. A lot of foreign companies, you know, have been coming to Australian shores and using, importing their own products which don't meet Australian standards.
Through the chair.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. You're right. It is largely a building matter, but you are right. They do need to meet Australian standards. They will need to employ a building surveyor that is certified in Australia, and it's through that building approval process that matter will be managed.
Thank you.
Noting that it is an imperfect process. Any other speakers for, against, or questions, councillors? I'll hand it back to our mover to close, Councillor Harris.
Thank you, Mayor. I thought the councillors were a bit quiet there, but we'll proceed with the process and hopefully get some good examples of the work that can be done around the place in a short period of time.
Thank you, Councillor Harris. With that, I'll put that to a vote. All of those in favour, please raise your hand or say aye. We have Councillor Keyser, Councillor Barwick, Councillor Mason, Councillor Ashley, Councillor Archer, Councillor Harris, Councillor Lowe, Councillor Orr and Councillor Dawson. We are unanimous. The motion is carried. Thank you, gentlemen. Fantastic. Section 8, Office of the General Manager, excuse me, Section 8.1 details council workshops that were conducted in February and March, the attendees, as well as the contents of those workshops presented to your council team. It's really to note the report. Can I call for a mover and a seconder? Our mover is Councillor Orr, seconded by Councillor Ashley. Councillor Orr.
Just to move the motion as presented. It's been a fair bit of information on our agendas and the workshops and the council meetings, so sorry to move the motion.
Thank you, Councillor Orr. Councillor Ashley.
I'm just in agreement with Councillor Orr. I think we've worked out pretty well most of the things that we need.
Thank you, Councillor Ashley. Any speakers for or against or questions?
All I'm going to say, Mr. Chairman,
can you just can you bring the microphone closer to you as well?
Can you hear me over there, Dan?
Yeah, that's better. Fantastic.
Thank you. This is only a recommendation, actually, to receive the report, so I'll receive the report.
Thank you. All right, anybody else? Otherwise, yes, Councillor Lowe. Yeah,
thank you. I just had a question. I did forget to ask at the workshop, so it's just something minor. On the Tuesday, the 11th of March, it talks about advocacy, and I've just got a question mark because I can't recall what that was.
Neither can I. I think we looked at our advocacy plan on that day, and I think the new finally printed and collated version was presented at the workshop. I think that was the agenda item.
Thank you.
So it was reviewed by councillors and presentation. And it was tabled. Yep, there we go. And Councillor Ashley has a copy. Anyone in the gallery would like to have a look at it? That's, those are the things we're going to ask for come this election. All right. Anybody else? Otherwise, I'll move it back to Councillor Orr to close.
Nothing further to add, so close.
Thank you very much. We'll put that to a vote. All those in favour, please raise your hand or say aye. And we are unanimous again. 8.2. The Australian Local Government Association, or ALGA as it's known in government circles, their 2025 federal election funding priorities list. So basically this is a list that is compiled by ALGA through its constituent members at the 500 or so local government associations that prioritises what they would like to see at the next federal election. Briefly speaking, it is a pledge to ask for more housing infrastructure, more community infrastructure, safer local roads, better emergency management and better climate change adaption. Can I call for a mover and a seconder for us to accept ALGA's prioritised list? Our mover is Councillor Harris, seconded by Councillor Dawson. Councillor Harris.
Thank you, Mayor. The information that we received from this is invaluable for helping our advocacy plans, where we try and relate our needs to the federal members, and hopefully we'll benefit from that.
Thank you, Councillor Harris. Councillor Dawson, a seconder.
Supportive of the motion. This motion effectively dovetails in with the previous motion where our council for our community is actually out there looking for opportunities to better ourselves, and this here pretty much is something that we can do to support other councils and ourselves around the nation. I think it's just, it puts things into perspective for state and federal governments that they understand what our communities are looking for as a priority, and that's pretty much it in a nutshell.
Thank you, Councillor Dawson. I open the floor to speakers for or against or questions. Councillor Mason.
I'm uncertain whether to support this motion or not, because there's parts of it that I think is just out ridiculous. Reform 5, where you had to get, if you wanted to nominate as a candidate for council, you had to get...
Different one.
The wrong one, am I?
Yeah, this is one.
Oh, sorry.
That's the next one.
No,
this is purely, this is 8.2, just the ALGA top 5. Got it. Anybody else? Councillor Orr?
So, one of the RCs of $600 million per year for safer local roads.
Yep.
Does that include our footpaths as well?
No, it does not. I think it's literally two roads. Imagine 75% of the country, half of all fatal car accidents is what they reference. there is a, despite, in their estimation, there's a shortfall in roads to recovery of $500 million, and they're basically calling for a $600 million per year provision, $500 for infrastructure improvements, and $100 million for road safety programs. So I'm thinking that sounds a lot like roads and cars only.
So following from that, looks like the community infrastructure includes for bike paths, so that may be under that aspect.
Look, it's possible. I'm reading into that. I see what you mean. Okay, right, okay. So in the community... it's very possible. It's quite ambiguous about what they plan to shoehorn into that category. But basically, they're asking for $500 million a year for a community infrastructure fund to build, maintain, and upgrade local facilities that makes your community great. So how that dovetails exactly with safer local roads, specific to footpaths, is unclear.
So the $500 million is just for Georgetown Council?
I think we would do pretty well with that, but no. All right, any other questions? I'll hand it back to our mover to close. Okay, I'll hand it back to our mover, Councillor Harris, who is shortly detained.
Come back.
Councillor Harris to close.
Thank you, Mayor. Yes, nothing further to add.
Thank you. We will put that to a vote. All of those in favour as presented, please raise your hand or say aye. And we are unanimous.